Okay, let's move on. 793.
793, authorize a contract with Versaterm, Inc. for maintenance of the Regional Justice Information Network in an amount not to exceed $3,500,000 over a five-year term.
Okay, we have a presentation. I think Tamara Mayer is here from the Police Bureau. We have an amendment to increase the amount. So maybe I should take the amendment, put the amendment. Well, let me make your presentation, then we'll take up the amendment. You can explain why we have to amend.
Yes, sir.
Good morning.
This is to authorize a contract between Versaterm and the City of Portland for the maintenance of the Regional Justice Information Network, Region, in an amount to be amended, hopefully, to $3,790.
$3 million.
Yeah. $3,790,000. This is a five-year contract for the warranty. We had a one-year warranty with the original purchase of the system, starting with final acceptance on July 14th of last year. And we wish to continue to receive technical support from Versaterm under a separate executed maintenance agreement. One-third of the necessary funding for this contract comes from Portland Police. The other two-thirds is shared by our regional partners, 40-plus other law enforcement agencies.
Anything else to add?
Would you add your name for the record, please?
I'm sorry, Tamara Mayer.
Tamara Mayer.
And yes. Kim Roark.
So, and this software is up and running and working.
Yes, sir.
That's important because we have a thoughtful technology oversight process here. We want to make sure we're getting what we planned on.
Yes, sir. We went live on 14 April of last year. So yeah. It's just over a year in the works.
Great. Okay, so let me move the amendment to change the amount to $3,790,000. Is that even? Yes.
Yes.
$3,790,000, so I'll move that amendment.
Second.
So discussion on the amendment. We'll top the amendment and see if anyone wants to testify on this item. So roll call on accepting the amendment, please.
Houseman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Hale?
Aye. Any other questions for our Police Bureau team? Thank you very much. Anyone want to speak on this item? Anyone signed up?
I didn't have a sheet on.
Okay. Come on up, please.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Charles Johnson, and of course, I'm not a specialist on all the data systems that are used by either our police department or the Oregon Department of Justice or the FBI, but I do think that probably more than just myself has read from the Associated Press that the city of Portland will be left out of the FBI's 2015 crime report following problems with the new record-keeping software used by local law enforcement. So I'd like to know if there's any connection between this $3 million system contract and this rather unfortunate inability to interface with the Department of Justice's Federal Bureau of Investigation.
Okay, good question. You want to address that?
Yes, sir. All law enforcement agencies are required to report their crime statistics into the FBI's crime data system. For 2015, because we had transferred to a new system and because we went from UCR reporting to ONIVER's reporting, which tripled the amount of data reports we were required to report, we were still in the process of attempting to convert the system to report the state requirements. We never made it there. That was a problem with trying to code. It was not just a regional problem. There were other agencies in Oregon that had problems converting their current RMS outside of region to report that data. We are in the process of converting to NIBRS, which is the normal federal requirement, and getting rid of ONIBRS. We received improvement from the state police to do that, and we are currently in the process of doing that.
So you expect this will be a one-year problem as a result of all that?
We had a grant that we submitted, and we came to council 2 or 3 weeks ago to get approval for that grant to help us with that conversion, to get away from the coding problems that ONIBR caused to get us to the NIBRS. And that we expect that to take about 2 years. We're going to fix 2016 first so we can make our February deadline to report, and then we're going to go back and correct the 2015 data and submit it. We will submit it to the FBI to report our crime data. It did not make the publication because it was not submitted before February of this year, but it will be accessible on their website once it's submitted.
I wait for that complete answer, and I, even though I've known as one of the harsh meanies about some of our progress on police reform, it's a complex bureaucratic issue that it's not all the fault of the Portland Police Bureau. There was some Oregon State specialized reporting. Is that separate?
Yes.
Oregon State does
it
separate?
The complexity of the O-NIBERS caused problems with the new system, and the two of them together just caused additional
Thank you,
issues.
Ladies.
Yeah, appreciate the question and the response. Thank you very much. Okay. Anyone else? Then let's take, this is an emergency ordinance. Let's take a vote, please.
Hoffman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Ritz.
Very glad to see Versaterm getting another contract. It means all of our system talks together well. Thank you. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Hale.
Thank you. Aye. And the second item on the same subject.
794, authorize a memorandum of understanding with RTI International for resources up to $48,700 to facilitate the Police Bureau Regional Justice Information Network transition to national incident-based reporting systems.
Okay, speaking of that grant, here
yes,
we are.
Yes, sir. We came before you 3 weeks ago to request approval to apply for the grant. The sum of the grant was in excess of $400,000. The grant is not going to be awarded until October, November timeframe, but it's going to take us at least 6 months to make the transition from O-NIBERS to NIBERS. So we have talked with the state or with the Bureau of Justice Statistics, and in coordination with RTI, they have offered us a pilot program which gives us the cost to fund the conversion through the vendor Versaterm, $48,700. In advance of the grant funding. So it's a piece of that grant that we received approval from in advance so we can start now, get that 6 months going, and still be able to make the February timeline.
That's great. Good work. Other questions? Anyone else want to speak on this item? If not, then let's take a vote, please.
Hoffman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Thank you for your work. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Yeah, thank you for your good management of this complex change. It's not easy. By the way, acronym control, NIBERS stands for National Incident-Based Reporting System.
Yes, sir.
So in case anyone wonders.
Yes, sir. And O-NIBERS is the Oregon
national
version of that.
That's right. So we do a lot of acronyms in this room. It's always good to explain them. Good work.
Yes,
thank you very much. Aye.
Right.
Thanks a lot.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay, let's take 795, please.
795, accept bid of Skyward Construction, Inc. for the Portland Communications Center seismic upgrade, roof replacement, mechanical upgrades, and envelope repair project for $2,786,000.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Sharon Raymore. I'm with the Facilities Group. I'm going to be the project manager on this project, and I'm here to answer any questions if you have any for this.
Okay.
And I'm Larry Palat from Procurement Services.
So we have a $786,000 project here.
I guess the two things that jump off the memo we got are the one bid and the difference between the original estimate and the final bid amount. Would you care to comment on both?
I can speak to that. So we had a mandatory pre-bid meeting and five prime contractors were in attendance. However, come bid time, we did just receive the one bid from Skyward. To speak to the difference in the cost estimate versus the bid received, we did a professional cost estimate with the 100% construction documents, which is basically the plans and the specs, all of the details on the project. However, I think that the difference can be kind of spoken to as an indicator of the current construction industry and that we're experiencing a boom with private and public sector opportunities. And I did reach out to the contractors that did not bid to kind of find out, you know, what it was that prevented them from bidding. And essentially it was, you know, that there were more opportunities elsewhere that maybe weren't as complex. And then the second piece of that of this project is that because it's at the communication center and this is a 24/7 operation that's going to remain occupied during construction, that there's a lot of risk to be held. The level of due diligence that we're requiring of the contractor is on the upper side of the scale of, you know, so that, because we can't have any of the critical facilities going down.
You know, I've been on the council long enough to remember during the recession that firms that didn't typically bid for certain kinds of work were bidding because they wanted to keep their crews busy, and they were undercutting the market because they had fixed costs, and so they wanted the work. Are we at risk of the reverse now, where because of the fact there's so much activity in our community, we're getting fewer bids, and people are bidding at a premium, and so it's sort of a double whammy for us?
You know, I think that that is at play in some ways, but essentially the premium is a great brain jog for me in that any work that's part of this project, because it's a seismic upgrade, the roof replacement, exterior envelope repairs, and HVAC equipment, anything that's deemed really disruptive that would prevent the 911 call operators from being able to hear their conversations has to happen during the low call volume times, which is Monday through Thursday, 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. So with the contractor's means and methods being theirs to determine how they go forth and execute the work, having to account for a very odd hour swing shift potential is, I think, also driving the cost up.
Is just one last question. Where there is a significant gap between the estimate and the final bid, and we see this a lot. I mean, this isn't the only one. What's the circuit breaker in our system where we ask the question, do we need to do a do-over and figure out whether there's a different way of presenting this project to get a more competitive bid?
You know, I think it's case-by-case dependent. We are within our budget so that we were able to absorb essentially this larger number. And the construction documents are solid. I mean, they're the plans and specifications. The design team put a lot of effort. There's a lot of coordination going in on it. It's that means and methods piece that the contractor really has the liberty to determine, you know, with the parameters that we established in the documents, they get to decide how they will actually nuts and bolts put it together. And so that piece is hard to represent in a cost estimate because it is up to the contractor to determine that the means and methods execution of the work. So, you know, I understand what you're asking. I think that the nature of this specific project, I don't know that we could package it in another way because of the nature of the facility, the critical facility, that it's just kind of going to be a hairier project of complicated.
It has very unique characteristics. Mm-hmm. And you've also said the magic words that you're still with the budget.
Yes. Ding, ding, ding.
Other questions?
Yeah. Sharon, first of all, thank you very much for your work on this contract. I've got a question about the timeline. As you said, a significant element of the project is replacing parts of the roof of the communication center, which houses the 911 operations floor as well as BTS staff. Given that it's already July 6th, how much of that roof repair work do you think we might be able to get done before the rain starts?
So the plan is to essentially front load the nature critical, the weather critical elements of the project. You know, there's a lot of cross connect between the mechanical equipment on the roof, the seismic members of the roofing structure, as well as the roof. So those we'll be working with the contractor to kind of hammer those pieces out with the weather window that we have. So we are taking that into consideration, absolutely.
Other questions? Thank you both very much. Anyone want to speak on this item? If not, a motion, please, to accept the report.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Kaufman.
Aye.
Novick.
Thanks to Procurement and OMF for bringing this contract to us today. This is a very big deal for the Bureau of Emergency Communications. Repairing the roof has been a high priority for us for several years. The roof leaks onto the 911 operations floor when snow accumulates, and you can imagine the problem that causes since our 911 call takers and dispatchers rely on computers that have to be working 24/7 so they can answer calls and send help. We've been able to literally rig up buckets and tubing to keep water away from computers, but there's a constant fear that that system will fail, and it sends a terrible message to our hardworking call takers and dispatchers who have to navigate around buckets when they come to work. We were pleased to secure funds for the project in the 2014 fall bump through the Major Maintenance and Asset Replacement Project Fund. We've hoped that the construction would begin last summer. I understand that these processes take time. Our folks, of course, are anxious to get the project done this year and not wait for the summer of 2017, so I'm glad that we're expediting whatever we can expedite. It would be a shame to endure another winter risking water damage to expensive technology. Sharon said we do hope to be able to front-load the portion of this project that needs to be completed during nice weather, and then we can finish the rest of the project indoors this fall. That'll require everything going well, including the timely securing of permits from the various permitting bureaus. So I want to say that we hope that all the city bureaus will touch the project in the coming weeks, will coordinate and, when possible, expedite the review of this contract and the required building permits. Number one is obviously a city core service that we can't simply turn off for a period of time. So I'm glad we'll all be able to work together and get the project moving this year. So thank you very much, and I'm very pleased to vote aye.
You're welcome.
Thank you for all your work on this. I'm really impressed that after the contractor turned in a bid with no participation from women and emerging small businesses and minorities, you were able to work with them to get to 20.7% or $331,000 of subcontracting work. So that's really impressive. Thank you. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Bales.
Good work. Yeah, obviously buckets and other expediencies in a 911 center are a very short-term solution. So this is the right thing to do. Aye. Thank you. Okay. We need to wait on item 796 until the city treasurer is here, and she's doing interviews and won't be back until 11. So we're going to move on and return to that item and take up 797, please.
797, authorized health and welfare contract administered by the Bureau of Human Resources, Health and Financial Benefits Office with Express Scripts, Inc. for pharmacy benefit management, effective July 1, 2016 through June 30, 2021.
Okay, Ms. Bless, good morning.
Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Kathy Bless, Health and Financial Benefits Manager. I'm here today to speak on Ordinance Number 797, authorizing the contract with Express Scripts and the City of Portland to provide pharmacy benefit management services to the city. The acronym for pharmacy benefit management is PBM, so I'll be referring to that for the remainder of my talk. A PBM acts as a third-party administrator for prescription medications. We reimburse the PBM for costs incurred for prescriptions. And by contracting with Express Scripts, the city gets the value of their discounts, broad network pharmacy access, safety and efficacy programs, and the management of a restricted formulary. Express Scripts was the RFP finalist from the selection committee that included one labor and one management representative of the Labor Management Benefits Committee. Subsequent to the selection of Express Scripts, the LMBC committee voted to implement a restricted formulary, providing additional savings to the plan. The city spends about $8 million on pharmacy costs for the self-insured health plans. The estimated annual savings for the new PBM contract is about 2.5%, which is estimated at $860,000 per year, each year over the contract period. The savings is projected off the current cost of prescriptions and significantly decreases the 10 to 12% inflation we've experienced in pharmacy costs over the past few years. The new contract is also a significant factor that allowed the city to lower the out-of-pocket maximum from $3,500 to $3,000 for employees and to hold the rates again for the second year in a row on the city core plan. Change is always difficult in a health plan, and changing to a new pharmacy PBM is no different. We began communicating about the change to Express Scripts with the first annual enrollment information sent home and via email in mid-May. Temporary ID cards were mailed out with confirmation statements on June 27th, and Express Scripts started mailing its welcome kits and ID cards at the same time. Express Scripts also has extensive online and app capabilities, allowing participants to access cost information by pharmacy, by location, brand or generic equivalents, and whether they can fill the prescription for a 30-day or 90-day period at any of the area pharmacies. 376 of the 10,650 plan participants have received letters indicating that they may be affected because of the new the formulary that was put in place July 1st. Express Scripts will work with plan participants and providers to safely transition to a covered medication or work through at the appeals process to provide non-covered medications that is as an exception because of a medical need. We have also worked with the Healthy Foundations Program to provide assistance as a local resource for concerned participants. So at this time, I'm happy to answer any questions that you have and also request that you approve this contract. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for Kathy?
Well, I guess I'm still trying to wrap my head around this restricted formulary, and can you just explain in sort of lay terms what that means for all of us city employees who are currently using prescription medicines and what changes, headaches may we anticipate in the next month?
Month or so? Sure. Yeah. Sure. So restricted formularies are market standard at this point, and for larger PBMs, such as Express Scripts, they have a lot of buying power, and they can make significant cost savings to groups that they work with by only providing maybe 4 of the 8 medications that are offered in the marketplace that maybe all 8 are therapeutically equivalent. So they contract with a few lesser of the vendors. It provides the city a bigger discount, less cost to the participant when they're picking up their prescriptions. That's a basic premise around a restricted formulary. It does not restrict the newest and greatest medication that saves lives. That's not what a restricted formulary is about. It is about looking at the wide variety of medications that are available and selecting the ones that are most effective and add the most value.
So can the pharmacy do that without having to get a new prescription from my doctor?
Typically, it depends on a plan. We do have, in our plan, we have some safeguards for that. So if a doctor says dispense as written, then the prescription, so long as it's on the restricted formulary, then it's dispensed as written. So the pharmacy will not automatically override that prescription. If the member just says, you know, I'd really like this one, then the pharmacy will check with their doctor to see if there's a medical need. If the medication is not on the restricted formulary, then there's appeals processes. You know, maybe you're allergic to one of the medications that are on the restricted formulary and there's a medical reason for you to be on something else that's not covered. That's covered through an exception process. And that involves a provider, the patient, and the pharmacy.
Thank you.
You bet.
Any questions?
Yeah, Kathy, I don't mean to give you a hard time about this, and I assume this is something I can work out with Scripts, but I just have to say that I went the other day to renew my prescription for these eye drops I have to prevent me from getting glaucoma and going blind. And historically, I've been able to get 3 months' worth of those drops. And they were looking under the new insurance and said, well, we can only give you an 18-day supply. So if it turns out that I really have to go down to the pharmacy every 18 days I'm going to get my eye drops, I'm going to have a bone to pick with these Scripts people. So I'll try to work it out, but I just wanted to give you fair warning.
Please let me know if there is a problem, because the expansion of access to a 30-day prescription from a 90-day prescription, we used to be able to get 90 days through Fred Meyer, Target, and Walmart, and now it is Safeway, Costco, Walgreens, it's and all of the other ones. So it is a much expanded 90-day network, but it might be medication-specific, so we could look into that if you'd like.
But I just got my card and information yesterday, Commissioner, and you can sign up to have them delivered to your home by the mail. So that way it doesn't really matter if it's not 18 days or 3 months, if they're just showing up regularly. I thought that was a nice benefit. I hadn't seen that before.
Can I ask you a question about the flexible spending account?
Yes.
So for those of us that have opted out because we have a spouse on another health care plan, we get this now credit card.
Yes.
And is the credit card front load all the money, or does it get put in pro rata?
So an FSA card front loads your entire election. So if you had elected $1,000 in a flexible spending account, all $1,000 is available to you on July 1st. It's one of the great things about an FSA that it allows you to have the money available and then pay for it through the plan year. And then at the pharmacy, the best way to use the debit cards, copayments at a doctor's office and at a pharmacy. Those are just clean swipes. Benefit Help Solutions is not going to email you and ask you for additional information. So those are very easy ways and convenient ways to use the FSA.
I applaud you for that, because the old system in terms of documentation was a little cumbersome.
Arduous.
The arduous, and it covers my entire family.
It does, all eligible dependents. So,
on behalf of the Fish Schechter family, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, other questions or issues to raise with Kathy? Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Anyone want to speak on this item? Okay, thank you very much. And this is an emergency ordinance. Let's take a vote, please.
Aye.
Aye.
Well, thank you, Kathy Bless and the Labor Management Benefits Committee. This shows that healthcare doesn't have to have astronomically rising costs, and you can get better service for the same amount of money by being diligent and managing the costs. So I really appreciate that, and I appreciate having the privilege of healthcare for everybody, thanks to Obamacare. Aye.
Fish.
Nice work.
Aye.
Hales.
Thank you. Aye. Okay. Let's move on to 798, which is a second reading.
Amend public benefits for Google Fiber Oregon LLC franchise.
Roll call, please.
Salzman.
Aye.
Novit.
Aye.
Ritz.
Thanks to Mary Beth Henry and your team for this good work. Aye.
Aye.
Hales.
Steady progress towards a better city. Thank you. Aye.